Welcome to the Classy Ring Attire Podcast. I'm Joel.
I'm Chris.
And it's time to get classy.
Let's do it, because there was so much wrestling this week.
There's a lot of wrestling this
between,
week.
Between Fight for the Fallen,
yes.
Extreme Rules,
yes.
Monday Night Raw,
yes.
SmackDown.
Yes.
And I don't know if, I'm sure you probably didn't watch it, but the main event of 205 Live was absolutely incredible this week.
That's what, who posted it? Was Cedric Alexander?
Yeah.
Is who hyped it up?
Yeah, and I mean, typically it's like, yeah, it's, you know, guys in the company that are going to bat for each other or whatever, but I watched it, and yeah, no, he wasn't blowing any smoke. Like,
yeah.
That main event between Jack Gallagher and Chad Gable was legit incredible, and it got me thinking, and I don't know if this is the right week to talk about it since we have so much other stuff to talk about, but it made me really think, do I have a favorite match for this year so far? Because we're like, you know, over halfway through the year.
Right.
And I couldn't really think of my favorite match of this year. I mean, the closest thing so far is probably that 205 Live match.
Yeah. I mean, have, like, the Rhodes Brothers at Double or Nothing.
Sure, yeah.
Is a definite contender. Who was in the main event of Wrestle Kingdom this year? Omega and... I'm blanking.
Tanahashi.
Yes, it was Omega losing the title. That's a pretty good contender as well. Although, it just gets a little bit of credit of like, well, it's the main event of Wrestle Kingdom. It always
right.
is like, a it's the Meryl Streep of match of the year.
It feels like it's going to get automatic
bid. If it existed, yeah. It gets the customary tip of the
hat.
But,
I mean, but by and large, there is no clear-cut like Omega Okada.
No.
You know, like, favorite. And you're not going to get one of those every year.
No. I mean, we've definitely had something, like, at WrestleMania, where you're like, oh, well, that's it. Cool. Thank you all for playing.
Right.
Now, I don't think...
I think for me, the only one that kind of comes close would maybe be the last takeover with Adam Cole and Johnny Gargano.
Yeah.
You know? Now, their next, I think it was announced this week, though. The next takeover, they've got a very interesting stipulation. And, you know, stop me if you heard this before, but it's a 2 out of 3 falls match. But Johnny Gargano gets to pick the stipulation for one of the falls. Adam Cole gets to pick the other one. And if there's a third, William Regal gets to pick the final one.
Okay.
So that's a pretty... it's almost like a 7... Or not, a 3 Stages of Hell match that we haven't seen in, like, over a decade.
Right. I mean, like we've...
The market's been flooded with 2 out of 3 falls matches lately, but I like that this is going to be different going to feel, you know, bigger and better.
Especially because the 2 out of 3 falls thing... really came into vogue for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
When they were like, oh, no wrestling during, you know, commercial breaks. And they just needed a way to stop a match.
And
so
their original takeover match, the one where they had to take out Ciampa because of the injury, was a 2 out of 3 falls match.
Right.
Like, but just a regular, you know, straight up and down one.
Yeah.
So I like this twist. And I think it shows off NXT's creativity.
Right. And there's a lot of... you know, bagging on, poking fun of WCW, especially the Russo era and later era of, like, complicated matches and complicated rules and them throwing too much into each, you know, stipulation and everything.
Right.
And I don't want to come to the defense of that. Like,
no.
don't you know, take it this way. But there is a great, you know, pathway to make really complicated sets of rules and be very interesting.
Yeah.
And especially when, you know, as good as NXT is, as much as we sing the praises, NXT is still a niche wrestling show.
Yeah.
And wrestling is a, you know, fairly niche entertainment venue for, you know, general public.
Yeah.
And NXT is about as niche as you can get in there and still be WWE.
Yeah.
So nobody is stumbling across NXT. You're not catching anybody's eye.
Not yet, at least.
Not yet. And I mean,
there's rumor, but...
Yes.
Yeah.
But that is a place to, you know, everybody who's watching that knows wrestling, gets how it works, has bought in enough to get the network or, you know, seek it out on Hulu or however, you know, you can get it in your respective country, whatever.
Yeah.
You have to seek out NXT. You've bought in. You're ready for this. And so to do something like that, I think is really an interesting idea.
Yeah, I agree. But let's move on to AEW for a little bit.
Yeah, so honestly, the biggest thing I kind of want to look at this weekend,
okay,
is like you know, it, in lieu of a like they did a good show, they did a bad show, this match was good, this match was bad kind of stuff. The biggest kind of thing with this weekend is both AEW and WWE had an event this weekend.
Yeah.
And they were comparatively the same size. Like, we don't really know what, you know, AEW's event structure looks like. We're kind of guessing based on what we've seen so far, the you know, three shows we've seen so far,
mm-hmm.
and based on what we know of WWE's existing event structure. But for the most part, these seem to be their B-level pay-per-views.
Yeah.
And so they both put on comparable shows, same nights or same weekend, back to back. And who kind of came out on top? Was there a top to come out on?
I guess it was more interesting, delicate question. I came into both shows completely differently. Like, I came into Fight with the Fallen with really high expectations coming off of those first two shows.
Mm-hmm.
And with Extreme Rules, I was coming in with super low expectations just because that's just what WWE's done to me lately.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, for those shows, I came in with opposite feelings and came out with opposite reactions. Like, I was kind of, I don't want to say let down, or it was definitely felt like the weaker of the three shows that we've seen from AEW so far.
Okay.
And I'm not saying it's a bad show. But aside from the tag team main event, there was no big marquee match that was really hyped.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Lucha Bros came out and stole the show because that's just what they do.
Absolutely, no question.
I think you can build the entire company probably just on Pentagon. But the fact that you've got, you know, both brothers, yeah, you could build the show around the two of them.
Yeah. Well, I think they're very much, I think they're the best tag team they have.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's, you know, Young Bucks included. I'm not ready to do it yet.
Right.
But, like, I definitely have the, like, rough draft of my hot take of Young Bucks are selfish and keeping them down because they own the company and they're not, you know.
Well, let them start the weekly show first.
Exactly. Like, again, this is, I'm not unveiling it.
Right.
But it's definitely,
you're just saying it's in the cooker.
Yeah. It's like, I've got it mapped out. I was like, because if they do it, I'm ready for it.
Right. Yeah. So, like, that was the big highlight for me. But having a card that doesn't have as much hype to it, I felt like gave way to for some of the flaws to come out.
Or
be more prominent than it usually would be.
Here's what it is for me. See if your takeaway was similar.
Okay.
For me, it's very much wrestling is character and storyline.
Yes.
And it's a play.
Yeah.
With heavy fight choreography, but yes, it's a play, not a stunt show.
Right.
And wrestling as a concept, as an art, is somewhere between a play in the round and a stunt show.
Yes.
And people can veer towards, oh, this is my favorite part, this is what draws me, this is da-da-da-da-da. Obviously, the best wrestling is a magical weave.
Of both,
Whereas
you will have stuff that falls on like every part of that spectrum.
Right, exactly. But I can say personal feeling, personal attachment, mm-hmm. ooh, storyline is what's going to catch my eye, draw me in. When you say this guy is going to fight this guy because it's exciting, that's leaning very heavily towards the stunt show aspect.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing. There are guys that I want to see fight.
Yeah.
When they just announce, you know, initially they're like, hey, you know, way back when, Omega is fighting Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
What? I never thought I'd see that. That's very exciting.
Yeah.
And that there was no story yet. Like, they put the story in afterwards.
Well, yeah, and it's just like because the match had absolutely no story leading into it, really whatsoever, but just the names alone got you excited with Moxley and Joey Janela, because we just know, based off of previous shows, their styles, like, that's gonna be a car wreck.
Exactly.
But and then didn't need any story, and it was still like it was, you know, on the stunt show side of things.
Right.
Well,
and I don't. I'm not saying when you announce these big things like this, my reaction is not like, let's see. I'm like, no, no, I get that, and I feel that pull and that tug.
Yeah.
But AEW so far has been, here's the card. Aren't you excited?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, yeah, I guess. Okay.
Right.
I mean.
And with like.
The like, okay, so stuff like the Rhodes Brothers match. There was story going into that.
Yeah.
There was also story that I had been telling myself for years.
Yeah.
Like, look at they looked at each other in the Rumble. There it is. They went, like, I've been, that story's there.
Yeah.
And that appeal is there. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, 8 out of 10 matches is this guy versus this guy.
Right.
And yes, that's exciting. And yes, that has its appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And that. But I know that you're a company now, and I know that you are getting in the business of telling a story that will go from now to forever, soap opera style.
Right.
And so when you do something like All In, where you're like, let's put on a show, let's raise up the barn, let's build a stage, let's put on a show.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's very exciting. When you're like, we're going to put this guy against this guy, and then we're going to put this guy against. Yeah, that's all very exciting. I'm very invested in that.
And that's, that's how their matches have been so far. And that's probably going to be how it is until, we do get a weekly show.
But this is also, this is their second one in 3 weeks. Like, this one and Fyter Fest were very close together. And so we're starting to get that continual storyline feel. Mm-hmm. We have this, Hangman Page Jericho thing.
Yeah.
We have a little bit of this, Moxley Omega thing.
And like, with the exception of obviously like the main like elite guys, this was a lot of it was the chance for the people that weren't on Fyter Fest to be on Fyter Fest, exactly. Which I'm all for. I don't know. Maybe it's just the planning out of the matches or something. Like, I didn't feel, because like coming out of Fyter Fest, I could point to a few people that is like, you know what, they really like did something tonight that made them a star.
And
I didn't really get that from really anyone. Like, I knew a lot of people afterward were like singing the praises of Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, and I'm like, well, I've been singing the praises for a while now, so whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Darby Allin, I felt like he came out of Fyter Fest looking like $1 million. Same with, was it After Party? Private Party.
Yeah, that's it. I don't think Fight of the Fallen was any worse or any better, really, than Fyter Fest. It honestly felt like the Democratic debates right now. There's 24 contenders. You have to split it into two nights.
Right.
Some are going to go on this one, some are going on that one. If you're invested in this candidate, you're more excited about that night.
That's fair.
And so, like, the big names are everywhere, but, the gotta make a name for yourself guys, I felt like they kind of got split onto the two shows, which is, I'm not even saying that's the wrong way to do it, but you're starting to see the gears, the magic isn't as magical as it once was. And part of that is like, this to me felt technically like the second half of an 8-hour show instead of its own 4-hour show.
Yeah.
Or 3 hours or whatever it was.
Yeah. Beyond that, they still have some technical things they need to work through. And again, this is before their, partnership with TNT starts, so TNT might just, be the band-aid for all this.
Mm-hmm.
I think I told you that they need to kind of work on planning out the ending of a show, you know, because especially for Fight for the Fallen, it felt real, like, jumbled and not timed out correctly, and well, it felt like they were really, like, scrambling around at the end, you know?
They don't, except for John Moxley coming out at the end of Double or Nothing.
Yeah.
Their shows have basically ended with a thank you for supporting us, thank you for believing in us kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is a house show ending, which is a great, perfectly fine.
That's what they did when the cameras went dark at All In, you know? Mm-hmm. You don't really need to televise that every single time. Like, I understand, like, at your big moments, you know, it's your company, do what you want to do.
I mean, I don't mind, but
if you start ending every pay-per-view like that, you're starting to get people rolling their eyes.
Well, there's just the absence of the what does this mean, what comes next feel.
Yeah.
And, you know, and again, these are not, you know, great secrets of the universe we're talking about. I don't think that, you know, basic long-form storytelling hasn't crossed the mind of these guys who have, you know, been working in this business for most of their adult lives.
Right.
I mean, and I can obviously see the argument of, you know, putting that out there is the most important thing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a certain brand of wrestling fan.
Yeah.
You're going for a lot more than, you know, one person. So there are people that will appreciate that.
Yeah.
I get that. I think that, but, you know, the biggest thing, I'm looking forward to that for me was Chris Jericho gets an open mic.
Yeah.
And not even because I'm like, Chris Jericho is an amazing talker and I'm going to hang on his every word, Roddy Piper, CM Punk style. It was just, this is hyping something. I want to see a promo. I want, you know, I want to see the storyline progress.
Yeah.
And they are not bad at hype. In fact, they're quite good at hyping stuff. They had the Kong and Kong thing, which was a good example of, you know, you don't have to work hard to hype that match. You do it exactly like they did. And so that was great. I, you know, that just acknowledging what you have and be like, all right, here you go. This is happening. Doesn't, you know, build suspense, build excitement. They did great.
And I don't really want to be, you know, just, I don't want to be another one beating a dead horse here. Cause like there's been above all else, the main complaint out of this show was, Alex Marvez on commentary. But I mean, what do you expect when you put a sports radio host as a wrestling commentator, like, and just send him into the deep end immediately, you know, like. Yeah, like Jim Ross, you could tell in Double or Nothing, like it took him a little bit to kind of get his bearings. But once he did, he's firing on all cylinders. Mm-hmm. And Excalibur has been incredible this entire time.
Yeah.
And everything seemed to be so smooth for Fighter Fest commentary wise with Golden Boy. And I know he's a very busy guy with esports and everything. But if I'm AEW, I'm sending him an open check or a blank check. And also, it was weird doing like a lot of the hype stuff and the commercials for AEW and everything was Tony Schiavone.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, a legendary, you know, commentator. And I'm like, you got him on payroll and you don't have him on commentary?
I don't know. It didn't bother me so much. And part of that is I don't watch this alone. I watch this with you. I watch this with, I mean, our friends are out there watching it. And we're paying attention to it, but we're answering questions or making comments.
Sure.
Or we're watching it like a sporting event.
Yeah.
I have never been one for sitting and watching sporting events alone.
Yeah.
And so even at the, like, darkest hours of the Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler, you know, commentator. I mean, I have my thoughts on it and I have my opinions on it,
mm-hmm.
but it wouldn't make or break a show for me.
Yeah.
It's honestly at its worst when somebody's really good,
mm-hmm.
and so I want to listen to them. Right. And like, God, I hate to keep like just bringing this back up, but like when CM Punk was on commentary, we've brought CM Punk up a lot recently.
Well, I mean, honestly, there's a reason to right now.
Yeah,
kind of like it. Literally today, it was just announced he's going to be at StarCast 3, which you know is in conjunction with All Out.
Yeah,
he was.
He's been there before.
He did a signing.
Yeah,
at Pro Wrestling Tees.
Okay, is he?
It wasn't. I don't think it was a StarCast event.
Is he getting in the ring?
I mean, there might be a ring there somewhere.
Is he scheduled or announced to get in a ring?
No.
Mm-hmm. Is he scheduled or announced to have a microphone?
I'm just saying this is him. He's getting closer and closer and closer to wrestling.
I hope you're right.
Sure. I'm not saying he's going to be at All Out in the audience or otherwise.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, for a guy who's fell out of love with wrestling, he's getting pretty close to his wrestling stuff.
But
he's also getting a very good paycheck.
Yes,
he's
been there before. I mean... He will still sign stuff if you give him money. Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, and here's a venue to sign stuff in order to obtain some money. Like, if he was there as, you know, even if he was just there as, like, you know, I'm going to be doing a Q&A or something.
Yeah.
That would be very interesting because he's a smart enough guy to know that if he's going in front of, you know, a microphone,
yeah,
he's going to have to face certain things.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, even if he's just signing, you know, signing stuff, he's still going to get a ton of, you know, AEW, WWE questions that he usually doesn't really bother himself with, so you know he's getting paid quite a bit.
Yes.
To just deal with that, where, you know, he can kind of shut his brain off and be like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Oh, yeah, of course he is. There's a world of difference. You know, I'm sure he gets those questions all the time. Like, you know, he's a recognizable face. He is probably, you know, stopped on the street fairly frequently, and I would say, you know, easy half of those, 70% of those interactions have some sort of like, you coming back to wrestling? I miss you in wrestling, Punk. I'd love to see you one more time. Like something about, boy howdy, it'd be great if you were in wrestling. That's an entirely different thing than doing something where you know there are cameras on you, you know that what you say is going to get reported in every dirt sheet in the world,
which I feel like he's gonna have a lot of fun with at a lot of people's expense.
Yeah,
where he's just gonna throw out a million different conspiracies and tell people a million different ways on how he's gonna be coming back.
So moving on,
yeah,
Extreme Rules was the night afterwards.
Yes.
It was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I for the most part I enjoyed it. You know, Brock Lesnar aside, just because I was, I feel like, you know, not only me, I feel like a lot of people were just expecting it.
I mean, there was a "We want Brock, no we chant, no we don't chant,"
right,
going on.
You know, it was at the forefront of everybody's mind, even before Paul Heyman came out and spoiled it. So all that out of the way, it was still an enjoyable show, you know?
Yeah.
I think it was more enjoyable than, you know, a lot of the B-level pay-per-views that WWE's done lately.
Yeah.
I liked it more than Stomping Grounds, is basically what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Somebody, I think it was somebody on Wrestling Observer, was making a big deal about the fact that we are exactly where we were 2 years ago. Brock Lesnar's champion. New Day is tag team champions. I think maybe even down to like Intercontinental champion and maybe United States. Like all the titles are exactly on who they were 2 years ago.
I don't know about that. There is, you know, one large looming difference, and that's the WWE championship.
Yes.
On a guy who had never won it before.
Yes.
So, you know, for as much as some stuff has stayed the same, there is some things that I've made a big change on.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with this. Like, while I understand where he's coming from, mm-hmm. It feels very much a complaint that was born out of, I don't like that Brock Lesnar is champion again, and I'm going to find...
Yeah,
and I'm then going to go and find these greater points.
That was their focus, and the more that they try to expand on their position, you started to see more and more cracks.
Well, I in theory, I get the complaint. You know, New Day has been champion for a long time.
Yeah, in a total of six.
Yes, they've been champions six times as a tag team, and one of those was a year plus.
Right.
I still will struggle, you know, when you're like, hey, who's the SmackDown tag team? And I have to be like, well, it's not New Day.
Right.
Because that's my default feeling.
And at the risk of sounding like I'm just splitting hairs here, New Day had never won the championships with the combination of Xavier Woods and Big E.
Had they not really?
They've won in every other combination except for that one.
All right.
So basically saying... Kofi had been involved in every single one of their tag team title wins.
Yeah.
But Kofi's got the WWE Championship, which is a huge difference from where we were 2 years ago.
Yes.
And even, like, the emergence and staying power of Becky Lynch at the top of the food chain, like, that's a huge difference.
Well, that's honestly... That is... kind of a problem right now.
Well, sure, because, you know, she's at the top of the mountain and we don't even know who is the next top person because it's just she's there.
There's Becky Lynch at top tier and then there's nobody in like the next two tiers.
Like you can
you
can maybe make the argument for Charlotte, especially now that she's back.
You can make the argument for Charlotte, but isn't she on SmackDown?
She is.
So, I mean, I know that doesn't mean anything anymore.
Come on, like that.
I know that doesn't mean anything, but they're clearly trying to keep them separate and save that for something big.
Right, which I'm okay with.
Which I get.
But that creates a problem in the meantime.
Yes. You don't have anybody who can... I mean, and that's...
That's the problem with Ronda taking time off.
Yeah, well...
Which, again, you know, I'm not complaining about for her because, you know... She worked an entire year straight with house shows, and that's definitely more...
It's more than I thought she would.
For someone of her stature?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was very impressed with that.
Yeah, I think we all said that and all agree with that. But there was the Ronda is the greatest, you know, world tour. And then when you feel... I mean, Becky is basically replaced Ronda as far as, like, top of the mountain by a long shot. Now, she wasn't given that. She obviously earned that through the back half of 2018.
Right.
But they're stuck in this position where, and that's the thing, like here's Lacey Evans. She's the number one contender.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait a minute.
Out of nowhere, seemingly.
Yes.
WWE needs to get back in the habit of building people long-term. And not just like, okay, well, we need someone to face our champion, so here's this woman from NXT. She's a blank slate, so let's go ahead and just shoot her to the top, and people will just automatically think she's a big deal. And, like, that's not how that works.
No. And you know what? Like, that could be how it works. You have had people come out, and I've gone, whoa, that's a giant monster. That's very impressive.
Kevin Owens comes to mind from coming up from NXT.
Owens from NXT is a great example. Honestly, I would say Ryback is not a bad example.
I mean, yeah, they did do the monster push for...
They did the monster push.
A little bit, but once he started gaining momentum, it was a rocket. Close to the top-ish until you got stomped out.
Right, but he very quickly looked like he was a viable contender for the WWE Championship.
Yeah.
Because that was the CM Punk year, and we were debating at the time, was like, is CM Punk going to make the year, or are they going to give it to Ryback? It is such a reasonable option that Ryback might get this. So there are ways to in a span of, let's say, 2 months, 8 weeks, get somebody from blank slate to viable championship. But you have to do it with the right people. You can't do it with just anybody.
Yeah.
And even if you have the right people, you have to build it right.
Right. I mean, like, having someone that is easy for the audience to get behind is key. And, like, I was actually reading an article earlier today. I can't remember exactly where it was, but they had done a focus group of people that have zero interest in wrestling. They are completely ignorant of wrestling as a product. Mm-hmm. And they showed them, like, some clips, photos of, like, some of these current wrestlers, and they kind of rated them, how much they liked them. You know, obviously Roman Reigns was at the top because, you know, the guy looks like a freaking Samoan god.
Yeah.
And then Becky Lynch was, you know, kind of, like, right below him. And the people that I kind of surprised me for people that are very, you know, they're not knowledgeable of the product. In the top four or five, you had Bianca Belair from NXT. Like, the highest rated female that wasn't Becky Lynch.
Okay.
She tested very well with kids as well. Velveteen Dream. Like, just over Bianca Belair. I think someone said that he could be the wrestling version of Macklemore. Like, all right, that's interesting. But, like, you've got people that appeal to the non-wrestling fan on top of, you know, because these are people that wrestling fans love.
Yeah.
You know, especially Bianca Belair. She's really coming along recently. And Velveteen Dream is just, you know, just likable through and through.
Mm-hmm.
So you have people that have that ability to get people behind them. All you have to do is build them up in a proper way. And then you've got viable challengers, specifically for the women's division with Bianca Belair, you know, eventually working her way up to Becky. And, like, because, like, we had SmackDown this past week.
Right.
And, you know, they're looking for a new challenger for Bayley.
Mm-hmm.
And just out of nowhere, they're like, Ember Moon, she deserves it. And I'm like, well, what has she done recently?
Okay. And that was the big thing. Like, why? Just in 2 weeks, just have Matt, you know, two matches tonight.
Yeah.
The winner of each match, they fight next week. Why is it so hard to watch somebody earn a number one contendership?
Yeah. Because, like, right now the storyline is Ember Moon needed a partner for a tag team match. She picked Bayley. After the match, they asked Bayley, who's next? And she's like, well, her. So it makes it seem like you just picked who was standing next to you and didn't, like, just try to beat you up.
Yeah.
Like, that's there's no storyline beyond that of Ember Moon, like, reaching this point, which she's fully capable of that spot and getting people behind her.
That will continue to be the truest, biggest befuddlement to me, is the refusal to, if the so often people are just given number one contenderships.
Yeah.
It is so easy to fill up time on your 5 hours of programming every week.
Yeah.
Just little baby tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know what you're...
Like, NXT is doing a great job of that right now with a bunch of guys, for the most part, that no one's really heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not only a entertaining tournament to watch, but is a great way for these people to become recognizable to your audience, you know, and make fans automatically.
Well, and I get the argument, the only argument I can figure is it's like, oh, we need to, you know, get these matches put together quickly so that we can promote, for example, you know, Bayley versus Ember Moon.
Yeah.
And first of all, no, you don't. Like, you can wait a week. You can wait 2 weeks. Yeah. Bayley versus question mark is great.
Yeah.
And you can...
Because we've got some time before SummerSlam.
We have time. You can also hype it up different weird ways. Like, let's say, I don't know, Bayley is putting an impromptu championship match on SmackDown this week. Main event.
Yeah.
And the person, you know, beats her to crap, and throws her out of the ring, and she doesn't get back to the ring in time. It's a 10 count, so she loses, but she keeps the champion.
Yeah.
Then she walks backstage. Shane McMahon's like, you won this time, but whoever you're facing at SummerSlam, that'll be a false count anywhere. That'll be a no count out.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're building up this SummerSlam match without who it is yet. So then you have the big graphic, Bayley versus question mark, you know, no count out match, false count anywhere match.
Yeah.
Whatever you get, cage match, whatever you want to build it as.
Right.
You can hype up these shows beyond this person versus this person.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's acceptable. You also have 10 matches on the card.
You do.
You have 10 matches.
It's a lot of matches. That's like, remember like 2-3 years ago when we were like, man, they got 10 matches on WrestleMania. How are they going to fit all that on this 3-4 hour show?
And they didn't.
No. And now they do it.
Match.
And now they do it pretty much every month now.
Yeah. But if you're going to have 10 matches on the card.
Yeah.
You can. And then you impromptu half of them.
Yeah.
Like the day of.
Yeah. Like they didn't announce ahead, really that far ahead of time, that Nakamura and Finn Balor are going to be curtain jerking on the kickoff show.
Like, why couldn't that? Why? I don't get it. I'm so befuddled.
Yeah.
If you don't know who you're like, well, we can't do that because we don't know who it's going to be yet. Like, first of all, that's stupid. Your show is in, you know, 2 weeks. You should know who's going to be there. And then, okay, that's why you do a tournament. You got two people you're thinking about. Well, they're in different matches. They'll fight each other next week. Then you can decide.
There you go.
I don't understand how that doesn't work. Okay, but we have to move on.
Yes.
So,
yeah,
we had two shows this week. Two companies kind of setting out to prove different things. AEW kind of having to go out and prove that they are a player in this. Not necessarily that they're great and WWE sucks, but that they're relevant. They're there.
I do want to point out one funny thing.
Okay.
If you listen to any interview with anybody else in AEW, Chris Jericho included, because Chris Jericho was on, I'm forgetting the name of it now, the used to be Nerdist with Chris Hardwick.
Oh, Idiot? Yeah. ID-10-10?
Yes, that's what it was. Everybody, because it's all asked, is, you know, how do you guys expect to compete with WWE? And every last one of them answers pretty much, well, we're not competing. We're just offering an alternative, you know, whatever.
Yep.
Everyone has been saying that pretty much from top to bottom. Tony Khan has even said it in interviews. You get Cody at the end of Fight for the Fallen and basically was like, no, it's war. How dare you put counter program? You can't do that to us. And I'm like, on top of, you know, the sledgehammer and the throne thing. And I'm like, all right, Cody, like, come on, man. get with what the right hand's doing because the left hand doesn't know.
First of all, somebody asked, I don't even remember who it was in WWE. It wasn't Vince or Shane or anything. But somebody asked, do you consider AEW competition?
Yeah.
And their answer was maybe was like, yes, they're absolutely competition. Everything is on. Netflix is also our competition.
Yeah.
Sleep is our competition.
Yeah.
Anything you are doing with your 24 hours that is not watching WWE is competition for us.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a great way to kind of express it.
Yeah.
Where you're not necessarily poo-pooing them and at the same time not necessarily being like, they're so big and scary, I don't know what to do. Like, you're... But to acknowledge that, you know... That's kind of a thing in content creation.
Mm-hmm.
You, the audience, have 24 hours. Unless you're dragging two TVs together.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to pick something to do with it.
Yeah.
We all have, you know, to-be-read books. We all have to-watch shows. Like, our queues are growing faster than we can do anything about it.
Ain't that the truth?
And so, yes, it is competition. And to suggest that it isn't is, I don't know.
Yeah.
I get what you're doing. I get the being polite. I get that we're offering an alternative.
Yeah.
But no, it's competition. It's absolutely competition. I've got X number of time. I kind of
read it as most people in the company are not trying to get too cocky just yet.
I get that.
Now, once the weekly show has been going for a little bit and they get some momentum, yeah, then, you know, talk all the smack you want,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially if your ratings are comparable to WWE at that point.
Yeah.
I just remembered one more thing about Fire for the Fallen. It's just tiny little criticism.
Okay.
And I swear it's constructive. I think there needs to be more communication between whoever is producing segment to segment, or even if there is producers, yeah. it might just be the wrestlers. There needs to be more communication on who's doing what during what segment. You don't need every single bad guy at some point in that segment flipping off the camera.
Yeah.
Like, literally, it felt like every bad guy in each segment was doing that, and eventually comes across like, oh, this company is full of, you know, upper middle class white kids on Instagram that feels like they need to flick off the camera every single picture,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
Like, okay, we get it. You guys got attitude. Like, let's chill.
I
find a new way to express what you're trying to get across.
I don't disagree with you. I think there...
It loses its effect, that's what I'm saying, if
yes.
more people are doing it at the same show.
I agree. I think that having done creative work, theater and podcasting and mm-hmm. whatever, there is so much, that looks like something I can do, I'm going to do.
Right.
Which I feel like they've basically done. Like, they've done a good job of it, but these are a lot of wrestlers who go, that looks like something I could do,
yeah.
I'm going to do. And then you find out that there are additional things to it.
Yeah.
I will give you an example. The first time I ever produced a show, like from conception pitch,
yeah.
This show is going to happen, based on I'm saying it's happening.
Yeah.
We were days away from opening night. It was like the week of. And I was kind of sitting around. I was like, why haven't playbills magically appeared yet? Like, I should check. I was like, oh, that's me.
Yeah. You're the guy in charge of this. Yeah.
It's never been me before. Right. They've always, somebody's just kind of had them there, you know.
It's good that you had that before. Thought.
It's very good that I had that thought. It was a big panic moment.
Yeah.
But there are things like that. There yeah. are, wait a minute, that doesn't happen on its own.
Yeah.
Segments, a collection of wrestling matches doesn't turn into a show on its own.
Yeah.
And right now, and that might be part of what we're seeing and feeling, is this is still this match, more than it is a show.
Right.
The ebb and flow growth of a show isn't as smooth and functional.
Right.
And that's what, you know, when we're watching match number three, match numbers one and two still exist and inform how we should be going into match number three.
Right.
Like
another good example of it would be, because I did see a lot of people criticizing at Fyter Fest. You had the comedy match during the buy-in mm-hmm. with the CEO guy. I don't remember his name. And Michael Nakazawa. You know, and they had the thing, like the joke, I forget exactly what they were, but they had these plastic colorful things that basically were the thumbtack spot,
yeah.
you know, and then like later on the night you had an actual thumbtack spot and I'm like, what, do you really want those two
yeah,
spots
yeah.
on the same show?
That's
like
a good example.
That is just, it's they might've communicated it well and no one saw anything wrong with it, maybe, but mm-hmm. it kind of goes against the whole, like, the old school way of booking things.
Yes.
You know, like, there's usually, like, one big table spot in the entire show. Save it for the match that needs it the most.
Yes.
Essentially.
I had a director once who basically told the cast they were costuming themselves. It was a show set in modern day.
Yeah.
Go to your closet, get something that fits your character. And it was kind of meant as this, you know your character the best. Yeah. You go and you pick out something that fits your character.
Well, in theory, it's a good exercise of, like, getting in touch with your character.
It was also a little bit of, like, a, we don't have a costume for sure. The show, and I'm taking on a lot as a director, and like, so, do this.
But you got to phrase it the right way.
Right. But that was the kind of thing of, go, everybody's costing the shelf. There was this one moment in the show. There's like, 20 people on stage, and almost everybody on stage right has a lot of red in the show. Like, and to the point where you're like, why is there so much red over there? Yeah. Like, I don't know what's going on in this show, but that's enough red that it means something. They're a gang or something. Yeah. Like, this is a
I'm assuming it wasn't coordinated at all.
No, it wasn't.
But it was just like, they just all happened to be
wearing. Yeah, they all happened to be wearing red.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I feel is like, I get, they want to be like, This is not WWE. This is AEW. You have your character. You know what your character does.
Yeah.
You know how to get the audience to cheer or boo you.
Yeah.
You do you. I don't, you're like, I'm not going to interfere with you. You do this.
Yeah.
And then you have middle fingers galore.
Right. And again, like, I'm not saying that anyone needs to be creatively stifled or anything, but there needs to be just better communication.
It is
planned out better.
It is the smoothing of a collection of matches into a show.
Yeah. And again, they're a very young company.
Yeah.
Like, this is all growing pains. And, like, above all else, like, these are fairly minor criticisms.
These are minor complaints, yeah.
And, I still
enjoy
their show.
You're three show olds making it up as you go, and my complaint is, like, there's too many middle fingers on this show.
Yeah, there's, you know what? They didn't plan out this, you know, charity event that raised like $150,000, $200,000 for an amazing cause.
And then showed me for free.
Right. Yeah. How dare them? No, it is very, like, you know, just minor,
okay,
minor gripes.
But so going back to the question.
Yes.
Their goal is they are here to play. Did they achieve that? Were they able to go toe to toe with WWE on a same weekend and not come out looking silly for even trying?
They definitely didn't come out looking silly for even trying.
Okay.
I feel like, you know, Double or Nothing, it's a big ray, you know, big incline. Fyter Fest, a little bit more of an incline, not as steep. I feel like Fyter Falls, they maintained.
Okay.
You know, which is fine, you know. The main purpose of these shows at this point is just to get their names out.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they didn't disgrace themselves or anything. Like, it was still a very entertaining show. And I felt like it still served its purpose to a very good extent.
Yeah.
I don't think it has hurt them in any way.
All right. And on the other side, WWE has the goal of, we're on the same weekend as AEW, but we're still WWE. We are the first and last name in wrestling. This, when you want sports entertainment, this is it, and this is your one true and best option. Did they achieve that goal?
Kinda, right? Yeah, because here's the thing. Here is, again, I keep
go
taking.
Ahead, go ahead.
Here's the thing.
I'll tell you if it's you've the thing got, right after you've said
you've
it.
You've got AEW with the Young Bucks, who as basically have claimed that they are going to be the end-all be-all of tag team wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Their main event of the show was a tag team.
Yes.
You know? They had a show with the Lucha Brothers on it. Who are they facing? Who cares? It's the Lucha Brothers, you know? Yes. And then WWE over here has a match with, like, New Day and the Usos and another team, the Daniel Bryan and Rowan. And that was like middle of the card. Mm-hmm. And it probably blew away everything that AEW had done the night before. Maybe not Lucha Brothers, but.
Not Lucha Brothers.
But, you know, it's honestly, it was probably better than AEW's main event.
Yeah.
And it's the freaking Usos. Like, if there was ever a debate over the best tag team in the world, Usos are probably up there. And New Day is not that far behind. And they have three guys that they pretty much just swap out whenever. And those matches are still amazing.
Yes.
You know, like, that's that's special.
Mm-hmm.
So, and like that match in particular, it was like they didn't even need to have those guys in a match against Usos on Monday Night Raw.
Yeah,
everybody else in that match were on SmackDown. And I'm getting them confused. Usos weren't even in the same match with New Day. I'm getting it confused.
Okay.
Usos were against
Revival.
Yep. And it was an amazing match.
Mm-hmm.
And the New Day had an amazing match with, where the smallest guy in that match was Xavier Woods with a bunch of, and maybe Daniel Bryan.
I say, is he smaller than Daniel Bryan?
But still, other than that, it was a meat factory.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, put two great tag team matches, almost it felt like a dare.
Well, and I mean, honestly, the thing that I walked away from Extreme Rules doing was I am a fool and have been sleeping on how amazing Ricochet is.
Yeah.
And I haven't.
Right.
He just was still that impressive.
And it felt like we were all sleeping on Aleister Black.
That is like, shame on me.
Yeah.
For not shouting from the rooftops that Ricochet is my favorite wrestler. Shame on all of us.
Yeah. And you had Aleister Black returning against Cesaro, who is just been unleashed,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that match was a lot of fun. The Ricochet and AJ, like it's Ricochet and AJ Styles, like how you know, like you said, how dare us forever doubting?
Yes,
and
we didn't,
right?
But we still felt bad about
being
pro enough.
On the other side of that, we've doubted WWE how they dealt with the tag team division for so long,
mm-hmm.
and it's like on this night WWE decided just to put everything on the table. Like here's our tag teams, we're letting them do their thing. And they completely showed up, the company that's supposed to be all about tag teams.
Yeah.
You know? So it just shows you, WWE can put on a superior product when they want to.
WWE has the money and the talent.
Right.
And they have the creativeness. They just don't, I don't have the organization or the leadership.
They just get in their own way mm-hmm. more often than not.
Yeah.
And it just shows you when they just... you know, guide with a soft hand,
mm-hmm.
guide their talent in the right direction, their shows can be incredible pretty much on a nightly basis.
I mean, everybody's like, oh, I hope AEW destroys and takes them down.
Nah. Mm-hmm.
I hope AEW puts their back against the wall.
Yeah.
I hope
AEW forces WWE's hands to just put on an amazing product.
Yeah.
So. Like, kind of a put on a great show or else kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll take that. All right, anything else?
Nope, that's it.
All right, as always, you can follow us on Twitter, @CRAttire, where we live tweet whenever it's appropriate.
Yeah, and if you have any questions, comments, have you have your own thoughts about this weekend, send all of that to our email. That's classroomingattire@gmail.com.
We're also on iTunes. Easy way to follow the podcast. Give us a rating of
5 stars.
Or write a review. That kind of stuff really helps out the podcast as far as iTunes metrics go.
And if you're listening to us on InsidePulse.com, leave us a comment on there. We'd love to hear from you.
We're also on Facebook. Easy way to follow Chris. Easy way to follow myself. See what other kind of things we're working on.
Yep.
Until next time, stay classy and huzzah.
Huzzah.